It's a bright and sunny Wednesday afternoon. Wow, the weather can be so hot. But we have a show on our hands today. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News. Joy News, independent, fearless, and credible. And of course, coming up this afternoon, factual, reliable, and accurate. That's how government describes a website launched to track projects and activities of the Akufo-Addo administration. But the NDC says the MPP is just attempting to appropriate NDC's projects as well as showing ghost projects. Also, we have details as well. Inflation surges to 2.6 percentage points to 25.8 for the month of March 2024 compared to 23.2 in February 2024. That's according to the Ghana Statistical Service. Details: as the contribution of transport to inflation increases in March, reflecting the changes in fuel prices at the pump, and happiness now is a meeting to agree on an upward review of the transport fares. We have the latest for you. Of course, later, the President Farmers Association of Ghana condemns decision by the government of Ghana to approve the commercialization of 40 novel genetically modified products, which includes maize and soya beans varieties. And of course, we have details plus this and more. The Pulse is brought to you by Global Communities Digilu, affordable, safe sanitation for all. We are live on DSTV channel 421. GoTV 125. You can also follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and myjoyonline.com for these and more. My name is Elton Broby. And we are back on the show this afternoon. And let's start from the government circles, because this afternoon they took a giant step at telling the people of this country what they've done so far in the last 7 years. And they want to describe it as factual, reliable, and accurate. That's government description of a website launched to track projects and activities of the Akufo-Addo administration, now dubbed the Performance Tracker. Government said it has listed 13,000 projects tagged via geolocation on the website as that was launched today. Works and Housing Minister Kujopon Kroman at a ceremony to allow the platform minister. The intention is to promote transparency and accountability in the execution of infrastructure and other projects across the country, categorized into 22 thematic areas.
Is first of all a database. It's a database that showcases the performance of the government of Ghana. And it showcases it through the various projects that have been executed across the 261 districts. And this database has two interfaces. One is a website. So you can go onto that website, www.performancetracker.gov.gh. And you can access that database, and shortly I'll take you through that database. The other is an app. Today, the mobile phone is a very powerful tool, sometimes even beyond what your desktop can do. And on the app, on the iOS system, as at now, I'm told the app version has been uploaded. And in the coming weeks, on the Android system, the app version will also be uploaded. So it's a database. You can access it through a URL, performancetracker.gov.gh, or you can download the app and access that database. And what it does is that it showcases the performance of the government of Ghana across the 261 districts, across the 28 ministries, and across the 16 regions. Now, what I encourage you to do is to, as you go through the tracker, pick some of the data sets or the metrics that you find very important. I selected 8, which I want to share with you, and don't ask me why 8. I just found 8 to be an interesting number, so I picked 8. Now, these are just a few metrics, 8 metrics that I picked from the platform just to highlight. As I mentioned earlier, when you're talking about the conversation on roads, you will find about 11,974.96 kilometers of roads constructed and rehabilitated from 2017 to 2020. That's 158% increase over the 2009 and 2016 data set. Jobs created between 2017 and June 2023, when this data was put in, a little over 2 million. So 2,087,000. And to tell you the source of the data coming from SNIT. So SNIT is the one that is providing this data. So for every data set that is uploaded, the source will be made available. Government Agenda 111 project, and this is very interesting. Agenda 111 project, when you take the numbers and you add it to the previous health infrastructure that existed, by the time we are done, healthcare infrastructure would have gone up by 55.9%. That is the addition of half of the stock that existed already to Ghana's health infrastructure. And I think we can give ourselves as a country a big round of applause on this one. STEM education, 5 schools completed, 5 under construction. And depending on which dimension you are querying, you can then go in there and then find the details for yourself. Over 5.7 million children benefiting from free SHS and TVET education as at June 2023, when this data was put in. I know that data set has even improved between then and now, because June, then there was September intake, etc. But as at that time, 5.7 million children benefiting from free senior high school and TVET education.
Now, Kwejo Opankrumah is convinced the tracker will address the misinformation, especially as the country heads to the December 7, 2024 general elections.
The performance tracker is an empowerment tool. It empowers all of us, all of society, so that together we can track our common progress. The general public is asking questions. Those questions are answered on the platform. Development partners want to know, when we give you budget assistance or specific project financing, what do you use it for? The answers are here. The media is asking questions on a regular basis. The fourth estate of the realm, holding government accountable. What has government done with the resources of the state? The answers are here. Civil society organizations, sometimes across various sectors, are asking questions. The answers are here. And here, on an academic premises like this, you also do know that the academia is always asking questions. The answers are here. The performance tracker has an architecture of about 5 key parts. The information is organized in 5 key, may I say, buckets. And very quickly, I want to take you through it before we launch, and before I invite you to ask for some data yourself and find the data on the platform. Now, these are the 5 major buckets of information that you will find on the performance tracker. First, you'll find thematic areas. As I mentioned, in 2020, the tracker focused mostly on infrastructure projects. We've gone beyond that. And so in 2024, this tracker goes beyond infrastructure and features 22 thematic areas. So you will find, for example, roads, where you find a lot of infrastructure. You find education. You will find health. You find security. You find the 22 major thematic areas that we often query information about when it comes to governance. But we haven't left it just at the thematic level. We've gone a step further. For these 22 thematic areas, there's been a further breakdown into categories. And you have 105 categories within which the information has been organized. So for example, when you take health, within the health categories, you will find something like health infrastructure. That's a category. You'll find health recruitment, doctors, nurses, and how that is affecting the doctor-patient ratio and whether we are doing better or worse as we go along as a country. You'll find Agenda 111. All of these you will find just under the category or just under the theme health as various categories. If you go into education, you'll find education infrastructure. You'll find free SHS. You'll find teacher recruitment. You'll find various categories. So first, we organize according to thematic areas, and then we also organize according to categories, 105 categories. There are those who also want to find out, how about this ministry? And that's a work that, as was mentioned earlier, from the head of civil service through the chief directors and the directors, RSIM, we have done. How about this particular ministry? What sort of work has gone on in this ministry from about 2017 till now, or 2020 till now, or even beyond now, as we continue to track our progress as a republic, ministry by ministry? And so you'll find that 28 ministries and then the Office of Government Machinery are accounted for. So you can query by ministry and find for yourself what exists there. And some want to see by region. I think the Bono East Regional Minister smiling when, she saw the regions pop up, hoping that she will beat everybody else to what is available here. 16 regions have also been accounted for, and you see the projects listed according to region. And beyond that, the 261 MMDAs also have their projects accounted for here. So DC, you will be checking to see how many projects you have executed in your areas against other DCs. And if you have more projects, you please send it through the validation process, the very rigorous validation process, and when it is validated, it will be updated on the tracker. Very quickly, the thematic areas. So when
in the door for you to see exactly what they've done so far with your taxes and the money they borrowed, the projects that they've invested them in, all with just a single click of a button, and you get to understand this better. We'll get reaction for this for you, but first let's get to understand this new tracker and how it works. And we've put together some graphic for you, and then my colleague from the data desk will help me make sense of the issues that they have put out here. So for example, on STEM education, that's science, technology, mathematics, and of course the rest, completed 5, under construction 5. These are the STEM schools across the country, and this is between the period 2017 and 2023. The total STEM schools, government is hoping to roll out, the number is 10, and so far they've completed 5, and 5 are under construction. That is just for the STEM schools. And of course, construction of interchanges, roads, interchanges especially, government is hoping to do 12, 6 are under construction, 6 completed, 140% increase compared to 2016, according to the information that you can find on the government website that tracks all government projects in the country. So this is just about interchanges, 6 completed, 6 ongoing. Electricity accessibility rates. Now, as of 2022, 88.75% of Ghanaians have access to electricity, and 5.5% increase compared to 2016. So in terms of rates, government has added 5% more to what it met in 2016, taking the electricity accessibility to 88.75% across the country. And this is as at the end of 2024. It may have gone up because we are in 2024. And of course, I'm sure that we'll get to understand more when we speak to the government spokesperson on this matter. And Ghana Card successful registration. What the tracker says that between 2018 and 2023, successfully registered 17.7 million out of a population of over 30. Remember that children at a certain age are not eligible to be registered, even though the vice president some few months ago launched the project to register kids at birth. But we have a large category of an age group that is 15 years and old and all that. But they've registered 17.7 million Ghana citizens. So 17.7 million Ghanaians have access to Ghana Card. And this is between 2018 and 2023. And for basic school projects, completed 256 between 2017 and 2023. That's the number of schools that government has completed at the basic level, 526 across the country between 2017 and 2023. All right, so let's make sense of what we're told this morning. And Manasseh Atabwahin is a government spokesperson on infrastructure. Also with us is Dr. Thomas Anaba, former medical director at the Rich Hospital. Let me start with you, Manasseh. You're welcome to the pause here on Joy News.
I am the spokesperson for the Ministry of Works and Housing.
Right. So Manasseh, let's understand this. Perhaps as a background, what really is informing this initiative? Knowing very well that it's not the first time. What is different from what we have now from the previous one?
Okay, so a very good afternoon to our cherished viewers. I mean, most often than not, you would hear a lot of people demanding accountability from government. And the usual question you would always hear is that, what does government do with my money?
Right.
You know, what is in for me? Government doing at all in my district? When government shares the national cake, myself and my district, how do we benefit from this and how do we verify? And so you realize that in 2020, government launched the delivery tracker, and it was an infrastructure-based repository of government projects. Going forward, you realize that it will be important for us to include other projects that may not necessarily be infrastructure-based. Mm. And that's how come we built a performance tracker to ensure that we are able to update Ghanaians. We are able to give Ghanaians the accountability to even probe government further, and also to verify for themselves various projects that government is undertaking in their various districts and even in their regions. And so this for me, is a milestone that we've been able to achieve, and it allows every citizen the opportunity to verify and also to know what government is doing, district by district, region by region, and even across the various MMDAs. You'll be able to know the various projects that government has done. And the beauty of the performance tracker is that it's in two phases. There's a website of which you can access with a URL or an app. So when you go on Google Play Store, you'll be able to download the app. And at the click of a button, you'll be able to access any information you are using. And the performance tracker, again, is an enhanced version of the delivery tracker that was launched in 2020. The performance tracker is indeed very user-friendly, and it has more rigorous validation. It has undergone a lot of validation, you know, processes to ensure that whatever project we have enlisted on the tracker is verified and is something you can really see on the ground. And so this is an improvement, and we just want to empower Ghanaians to give them the opportunity to demand accountability and even to verify for themselves every project that government says we have done.
Right. I don't know if we have Dr. Anaba on the line. All right, so let's now try to understand this better. I mean, this morning, I listened to the former President John Mahama when he met members of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA, where he makes the point that between 2017 up until now, government has gone to the European market under the Eurobond, you know, platform to borrow $16 billion. And for him, he's been asking the question, and he's yet to be told what that money was or has been used for. Does this platform bring clarity to this matter especially?
Yeah, I mean, yes, definitely. So for every project government has sourced, there are, for every loan government has sourced, there are projects that are identified with such loans. And so if the former president, of course, is asking for what the loans have been used for, there are various projects we can mention and demonstrate on the ground, and we've even set locations, real-time locations, to the various projects we have cited on the tracker so that you'll be able to pin the projects down to the location site for easy verification. And so, yes, it's good for everybody to demand accountability from the taxpayers' money, and the government has moved a step further. This is the first time in the history of this country that a government has been able to provide and accountability and transparency to enable the Ghanaians with ease, even from our phones, to assess what government has done. And so this will, of course, go a long way to allow people to verify and to know what their monies or taxes have been used for.
Mr. Warren, since you speak for the Ministry of Works and Housing, let's zoom in on your ministry. Let's start with housing. What is the status of it? In terms of, the you know, we have almost 1.8 million housing deficit. What has government done so far?
Right. So the housing data, of course, would inform you that government so far has done over 3,000 housing units. I mean, just about 2 weeks or so, the Minister for Works and Housing, the Honorable Kojo Okonkwoma, embarked on a working tour in the region, the Greater Accra region alone. And there is about 10,000 housing units that are at various stages of completion. When you go to Tema Community 22, there's a housing unit being developed by TDC and even Community 26 as well. Yes, in 26, you find about 1,072 housing units that are completed. Beautiful story buildings. And about 800 of them are also underway. When you go to Community 22, you find about 400 of the housing units being completed by TDC, and about additional 200 is being completed. When you go to Latebi Okosi again, you'll find about 112 housing units that are also underway. And of course, when you go to Tesano within the police unit, you would find that some 320 housing units, of course, has been constructed. And so even in Greater Accra alone, and again, the Pokiasi housing unit is designed to build about 8,000 housing units, and the groundwork are almost done. And so in Greater Accra alone, you would find about 10,000 housing units that are at various stages, and we are speeding up works to ensure we are able to reduce the housing deficit of about 1.8 million housing units.
What about the rest of the country? What does the tracker say?
So for the rest of the country, what government is doing is to ensure that we roll out what we call the district housing projects. which will allow various districts to have access to the housing. We do not want a case where the affordable housing units will only be centered in Accra, Kumasi, and in Koforidua. We want to ensure some equity in the distribution of these affordable housing units. And so government very soon will roll out the district housing units so that in most of the districts, especially where the Agenda 111 projects are cited, we'll be able to have some housing units to even encourage doctors and nurses and other health workers who will be posted to work in these facilities.
Right. So if all this thing you are telling me about are evident on the floor or evident on the ground, why therefore do you need to put all of this on the website? Who exactly are you communicating? The Ghanaian people who can attest to whatever it is you have done?
It is important for Ghanaians to have access to data so that they'll be able to know for themselves what government has used their resources or their taxes for thus far. And I mentioned that every now and then you would find people raising objective questions, that what is government using our taxes for? What has the money been used for thus far? And so it's important for governments to render accountability by bringing accountability to the doorstep of every Ghanaian, ensuring that even at the comfort of your home or your office, you are able to set the internet or even browse your phone, just Google performance tracker, and you are able to know district by district so that you know what your money is really having used for. And so we think this is very important for us to advance the level of accountability to enable Ghanaians to know what their taxes are being used for.
And again, I don't know whether we can zoom in on health. Agenda 111 is a key government initiative that want to deal with health issues in the underserved areas. According to the tracker, 88 of such projects are at various stages of completion. Is that the case?
Yes. So with the tracker, what happens is that the tracker has been updated to June 2023. And so from 2017, January to June 2023, you'd find projects that are updated over there. So if the tracker is mentioning that we have 88 at various stages, that is the point. The tracker is also designed in such a way that at every point in time, it will be updated to provide real-time data. So that even if there are progress on the various hospital projects as we are discussing, we'll be able to update it for Ghanaians, of course, to be able to verify as well.
Because I asked because we were told by the minister when he did the launching that what is available on the website is up to a period of 2023. I know, for example, yeah, on Agenda 111, we've had conversations with the government spokesperson the government advisor on health, Dr. Nsi Ansari, early this year, where he mentioned, for example, that the attitude of some contractors meant that government had to cancel the contract of some contractors that were working on some of the Agenda 111 projects. The reason why some of them stalled, that's why I was asking whether the 88 are projects ongoing and we can easily verify.
Yes, the 88 are projects ongoing. And as we are discussing, you can easily verify them. You hit the ground and you realize that in these various places, the projects are at various stages of completion. And so these 88 can easily be verified. And indeed, they are projects that are ongoing.
All right. So the end game really is what? To address misinformation?
The end game is to afford and to allow Ghanaians the opportunity to have the true to demand accountability from government, to be able to verify for themselves various projects that are ongoing, even in their various districts and regions. And again, it allows government to know which projects are near completion and also to speed up our pace of work. And again, it will also serve as a database repository so that should you want to find out what government is doing, should you want to know the progress of work, of the various projects that government is doing, at the click of your button, you'll be able to know it even on your fingertips.
All right. Let me ask a final question so I can let you go, because you are from the Works and Housing Ministry. Small rain and we are exposed as a country in terms of our flood preparedness. I mean, we are just about to enter into the rainy season proper. Right. The minister has been out there to address himself with the state of affairs in terms of our flooding issues. I mean, this year, Are we likely to have a reduction in terms of the flooding? Have we done so much to address this matter head on?
Right, so that is the objective of government. And the ministry is also speeding up works. And when you look at our national flood control program, especially for 2023, we couldn't harness all the resources. And so we have some backlog of work to be done. But the Minister for Works and Housing is always on the contractors to ensure that, one, we are dredging the Odor and other basins, and also the storm drains that we are building, we are speeding up works on them. And what government, again, is doing differently this time around is to ensure that there's a collaboration between the various assemblies within which you would find the storm drains and also the ministry, to ensure that we sign a memorandum of understanding to get people who will be able to even man these storm drains. Most often than not, you would find people are still in the habit of dumping refuse into our various storm drains, and that, of course, will certainly lead to our storm drains being choked, which, of course, will facilitate flooding. And so we are speeding up works. We agree that the rains are almost here with us, and the timing indeed is short, but we are not relenting, and we are ensuring that whatever resources contractors need to desilt our river basins or our storm drains, we are providing to them. And also, the Ghana Hydrological Authority is also speeding up work on the building of storm drains across the country. And we've also entrusted into the care of the various assemblies to ensure that they take full ownership of the storm drains within their area so that they'll be able to desilt it regularly to reduce the incidence of flooding this year.
I'm absolutely certain that in the handed over notes that came from the Honorable former MP Francis Asenso Buache to the current Minister for Works and Housing, Kwejo Okonkrumah, I'm certain that included in that handed over notes was the fact that funding has always been a challenge in terms of addressing the flooding issue. The minister last year, in a communication that became a national issue, complained about the fact that the finance ministry had not been regular in terms of providing the needed funding. In fact, he quoted an amount between 800 and almost 2 billion Ghana cedis to address the matter once and for all. Funding, I'm certain, is still a challenge. How are you going around this?
Funding, of course, when you look at the resources of government and even across every country today, there are challenges all over. But government is putting in more effort. Even with the little resources we have, we want to speed up works so that we wouldn't have to waste, huge resources to set people who have been displaced by even flooding. And so with the little funding we have, we are still speeding up works so that flooding will be minimized to the barest minimum this year.
All right. Manasseh, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. All right. So Manasseh Wahinene is a spokesperson for the Ministry of Works and Housing. And we have been discussing the government tracker that was launched this afternoon. So, let's open this discussion to independent thinkers. And Dr. Charles Anaba, a former head at the Rich Hospital, joins me as we, explore the benefits, if any, from what government did this morning. Dr. Anaba, thank you very much for your time this afternoon on the Pulse. And let me ask of your initial reaction to this tracker, which in itself is not new, but government said this is modernized to address what exactly people are asking and looking for. What is your initial reaction to this? And if you can kindly unmute for me, Dr. Anaba.
Thank you very much for having me. Right. And good afternoon to your cherished viewers. Mm. Yeah, I can say a modernized tracker or whatever it is, that is not what the people want. What the people want are the infrastructures. That is what we want. And you spend money to modernize a tracker, and you don't spend money to put up the infrastructure, would not be anything to Ghanaians. It's just money to the developer and nothing else. Because we have seen a tracker before, and we traced an infrastructure that was mentioned in it, and we got to nowhere, and we never found anything. We pray that this time, at least we should find some of the things that they were mentioned inside the tracker to be true. Or else I'm still waiting to browse and really see what is inside for my community.
Right. And Dr. Anamba, you can trust Joy News to verify on the ground what is on the tracker or the tracker on the website. But let's focus a bit on the health area, which, I mean, is an area that you have a lot of interest in. So, for example, the tracker talks about the Agenda 111 health infrastructure. It also talks about the ambulance service, the emergency, you know, calls that they responded to, given an indication that it's been very good in terms of these implementations. Even though, for example, the Agenda 111, they are yet to fully complete some of them and hand them over to the districts to use. So, are we, in terms of health, is government taking the right steps?
You see, Agenda 111, we've also monitored it. And I can tell you, very few of them have passed the 50% completion. And with the time left for the government in power and the economic crisis in which we are, the money that they are sourcing to do this, I don't think that they'll be able to complete, let me say, 20% of them before their tenure is over. Because we have visited some of the places and we have seen some of the infrastructure. It's not only the infrastructure, because these things are said to be turnkey projects, meaning that you have to procure equipment and then the rest. Right. The money to get to procure these equipments, bringing them in, with the challenges we have in even clearing donated goods at the port. I want to see how they are going to clear all those things at the port and bring them in before December 7th. So to me, I would say yes, it's good to put what you have done in the public domain for people to see and judge. But we have had the experience of them not complying, being truthful to us. So let me ask, what about the other facilities that were being built under John Dramani Mahama? Mm. What are they doing to them? Are they completing them or they are not completing them? Or they are also going to, they are leaving them to decay and rot away, which is going to be a loss to Ghanaians. I just pray that this tracker should not come again to deceive Ghanaians. It should be a reality. The previous one had so many toilets in it, which is not bad though, but that is the work of, like, say, assembly members. I don't see how they should even add National Ambulance Service into the tracker, because the National Ambulance has a headquarters and has a district allocation center that everybody knows. Mm. Why should we put it inside? For what? That one was commissioned years ago. Mm. So why should we even bring it inside to show us where the ambulance is? What people need is an effective ambulance that is working and can carry patients to hospitals in and out, for them not to pay for the fuel of the ambulance, for them not to pay the ambulance service people. We create an enabling emergency service coordination so that people can easily get ambulances. But here's the case that some of the ambulances, to even get them, you have to see a politician to call them before you get them, because they are allocated to DCEs to monitor and to control, which I think shouldn't be the case.
But you made a point about why certain, you know, government projects are on the website. I mean, what is certain according to government officials is that when you visit the website, we are not going to see projects done by the MPP. We see projects done by governments, successive governments. And so it's not really a political propaganda, if you like, to sell the projects and activities of the MPP. But when you visit it, you are likely to see projects under ministries and what has been done so far.
Oh, but is that their legacy? We thought that they were going to show us their legacy. If they are going to do project under, look, definitely they will play politics with it. They'll say any project you see in that tracker is under MPP, which is not true, because they can't tell me they are going to put Legon under that project. They won't tell me they are going to put War Hospital in that tracker, because if they put it there and say it's theirs, people are going to get on them. They're best to do like NDC did, devolve their green book and put their projects, like what they did the last time, the first tracker they did. Mm. They put their projects that they devolved. They should put those ones there. Have a government project, there are so many, from Kwame Nkrumah up till now. Are they going to list all the factories Kwame Nkrumah put before he left power? Are they going to list them out as part of their infrastructure? That is not necessary. We don't want the government to come and tell us all what is government property. Common vehicles that they handed over to them. Some couldn't be traced. How are they now going to get all government infrastructure and put it in the tracker for us? I think that this, to me, perhaps is going to be a political gimmick or just a waste of money to feed a software developer. And that is it. There's no need putting all infrastructures there. Put what you have done. Let NDC also put what they have done. Let CPP also put what they have done. Let's compare the two or the three and see who is doing better with the little that we give to them.
And I'm absolutely certain, I mean, from what I've seen, that there is time segment. So you can clearly see what was done between this period and that period. But on health, I'm curious to know, the healthcare delivery in your region, for example, is it better? Is it getting better? What is the situation?
Oh, I can tell you it's not getting anything better. We're having rise in tuberculosis. We're having rise in HIV. We're having challenges even in the hospital with consumables. Patients sometimes have to buy gloves to get surgeries done on them, buy sutures, buy even common catheters, buy even drainage bags and then the rest. So how is it getting better?
Is your district benefiting from the Agenda 111, or you're already sorted?
Oh, my district, where I come from, is Garu, but I live in Tamale. And my district is having serious challenges with health deliverables. Mm. And the infrastructure there, Agenda 111, is almost about, 50-something percent. It's not gone anywhere yet.
Mm.
And without it, it will be completed. Without. And in that constituency, we don't even have an ambulance, an active ambulance to carry patients to hospitals. It is people's private vehicles. I have brought a private vehicle to run as an ambulance there, and that is what they are using. Everybody in the constituency, that is what they are using. And
the
ambulance.
The constituency is supposed to have an ambulance as per the one constituency, one ambulance, program. Is your constituency left out? I'm sure there's an ambulance in your constituency.
That is what I'm telling you, that the ambulance is there. It breaks down. They can't service it. They can't repair it. They don't have fuel and then the rest. So it is by name. Because if you go and put an ambulance under DCE, not under the National Ambulance Service, being operated by the National Ambulance Service, but it's controlled by the DCE, when there's no fuel, it can't move. And an order was given that patients should pay for their fuel for ambulances when they want to take them. And that is what is happening. And people cannot pay for the fuel. They can't pay. So you don't blow up things as if it's an achievement. Just like the senior high school, then people have to pay more for their children to go for a free senior high school. People are paying more to get more expensive to get the ambulance, take them to hospital in where I come from, than the amount they pay to get my driver, take them to the nearest hospital where it is needed, because they only pay for some little fuel. But the government facility, government ambulance will charge them more money. So they even prefer to use the voluntary and then the free car put up by a citizen other than going to the National Ambulance Service.
My final question, because you once heard the Red Hospital, my final question, this is a public interest question. Now, this week, I'm sure you've been following the news about the Global Fund donation of $40 million worth of drugs, and for over a year, because of back and forth between the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Finance, and the Ghana Revenue Authority, the drugs, some of them are still, at the Kotoka International Airport yet to be cleared. And we've been told that, some of them are nearing expiration. Konfanoche, the Otumfo, decided to mobilize resources to renovate part of the hospital because, for over 70 years, the hospital has not seen any major renovation. And they undertook, a donation drive. They got some money. They are still below the target they were looking for. Now, they brought in equipment, and this morning we're told that they had to pay almost 1.8 million Ghana cedis to clear the goods, even though in the afternoon we got information that the finance minister stepped in and said that they will absorb the amount of money involved. What is the practical solution to this issue?
Thank you very much. I think that this is a practical measure of how government considers the health sector, how government has compassion for Ghanaian patients and how government has interest to invest in health. Why is it that they can't clear medicine men for tuberculosis when we have reports in 2023 that tuberculosis is on the rise, HIV is on the rise? Then somebody decides to squeeze his tummy in his country, donate money to an NGO to buy drugs to come to give to Ghanaians to make sure that tuberculosis and HIV do not spread. The numbers should reduce. And the government says, because you don't have enough money to clear these donations to come and give to me, I won't let it come into the country. This is seriously considered as insensitivity on the part of government. How can somebody mobilize resources? I salute Otum for mobilize resources to renovate the hospital for government to take care of people. The items arrive to help in renovating the place. And government, instead of embracing him and rushing in with a waiver for him to clear the goods and go and complete the hospital, they are dilly-dallying and dragging their feet. Clear example of the insensitivity and the way government considered the importance of health delivery in this country.
So the solution are hands. I mean, from your experience.
Hotel has been given a waiver of 3 point something million to import resources to build materials to build that hotel. Is that more important than the drugs and then the materials that Otufo has gathered abroad to come to Ghana to save all Ghanaians, but they were more interested in a single individual and his investment? This shows clearly that our government has misplaced priorities. Serious misplaced priorities. And that they have to think further. The advices of government on health, I think they are not doing them anything good. Or else, I may consider that is Muntie Obia president and leader. Other than that, this thing shouldn't happen.
You still haven't told me the best way out to resolve this matter.
The best way out is for government immediately, like he has done, to give waiver for it. And also coordinate any donation coming to Ghana before they arrive, because they are always informed that they are coming. The finance ministry gives the waiver quickly so that these drugs don't stay there and expire. Mm. Just like Global Fund is warning us. If it expires, we are not going to give you more resources. We did the same thing to the Millennium Compact Challenge, and we lost millions of Ghana cities, dollars. And we are doing the same thing to Global Fund. Government should immediately make arrangements down for any donation coming for the health sector. Donation to be given a waiver. And period.
All right. Dr. Anaba, thank you very much for spending some time with me here on the Pulse this afternoon. I mean, we've been discussing the government's tracker that was launched this morning at GEMPA and the provisions on it. I mean, I would encourage you to go to the website and then assess the information there for yourself. And then you can track some of the projects, especially in your district, in your region, and in your constituency. Government says doing this and that. Is it really happening? You can track it, and then you can tell us what you found. But before we take a break, clearing an imported vehicle at the Tema port will attract 23 different taxes and levies. And this former president, John Mahama, finds ridiculous and shocking. According to him, the prevailing conditions at the port continue to make Ghana unattractive for investment and business. Interacting with members of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA, the former president, who is also the NDC's flag bearer for the 2024 elections, recounts the taxes and levies on Lexus vehicle that was cleared at the port.
The port, so that we'll have the most competitive port in West Africa. And that was because volumes had grown so much that the old Tema port could no longer handle. The only efficient berth we had was the MPS berth. For those of you who remember, it could take only 2 ships. And so anytime I flew out of Accra, I saw a queue of ships waiting to enter Tema port. And so I called Gapua director. I said, "But why do you always have this queue of ships?" He said, "So we don't have the capacity to handle all of them. So some of them have to come and wait with cargo for about a week or more before they get the chance to come in." And that's when I challenged them to build us a new port, because Gapua and MPS were partners already. So I said, "Government of Ghana doesn't have the money. You use your own balance sheet and look for the money and build us a port in which you are partners." Today, that port is operating. We have more capacity than it can even handle. And that is why we are sad that volumes are escaping. We must make sure that as much volume comes through that port as possible. Because even the phase two, if they finish the phase two, we can handle cargo for almost five countries in this sub-region because we have the capacity to be able to do that. Today, that port is earning Gapoha a lot of money. Since that port was built, Gapoha's dividends has been more than $200 million from the new port. And yet people say, I sold the port. Meanwhile, now, the dividend Gapoha is making, of that almost $200-something million Gapoha has taken, that is what you've taken $70 million out of to go and do Buankra port without a railway line. And the point that if my container comes, why would I wait for you to pick my container on a truck and send it to Buankra? I'll come and clear, negotiate the charge with the articulator driver myself and take my thing. Buankra can only be viable if there's a railway line. And so we're building it just because we promised that we'll build it. But after you finish, how are you going to send the containers there? By road? It's the same way we do it already. So I'd rather clear my thing in Tema, put it on a truck, and then haul my cargo to Kumasi. So we need to make our ports competitive. And all of us must work together to see how we can do it. One, clearance procedures must be made easier. And one of the promises I make you is that we're going to sit together with our trade ministry and we're going to look at all the fees and charges at the port and rationalize them. Those that are not necessary illegal fees, we'll take them out so that we can make things easier. We're going to let the port work 24 hours. And it's part of the strategy for the 24-hour economy. There's no reason why we can't clear our things on Sunday. There's no reason why we can't clear our things on holidays. The port is an essential service. The way that electricity company does not go on leave on Sundays and holidays is because it's an essential service. The port is also an essential service. And so the port must continue to work every day of the week, including holidays. And so we'll do that. So that people can clear their goods as quickly as possible. Aside from that, in order to make your lives easier, we're going to license some financial institutions. And so if your container is coming and you don't have the money to clear it immediately, you will go to the financial institution to be licensed to do that kind of business in the port. It will be a specialized financial service. So you take your customs document and then take it to the institution and say, look, my cargo is coming. These are the goods I have in it. This is the duty I'm supposed to pay. You sign an agreement with them depending on how long you want. I want a month to be able to gather the money to clear, or 2 months, or 3 months. Government will regulate the interest that they will charge you so that it's not excessive. So as soon as your container is put down, they will pick up your container, they'll pay government's money to it, and they'll move your container to their warehouse, and your container will be there. And then you take your time, put your money together, you go and take your container, and you go away. And so that is one of the things that we're looking at, to license special financial institutions to do that specialized service, so that government will also get its money up front. There'll be no problem with somebody's container staying in the port, demurrage, and all that kind of thing. Aside from that, we're going to look at the issue of shipping agents. It has come up not only in this discussion, but when we met the clearing and forwarding agents and all of them, everybody complained about the shipping agents, about the fees they are charging. A lot of those fees are not being charged in other ports or any other place. The same companies are operating in other ports. They are not charging those fees. So why are you charging them in Ghana? And so those are fees that we're going to take away so that it reduces the cost of doing business in our port. A person imported a car, and I was just looking at the charges. This is it's a 2023 Lexus. These are the charges. 20% import duty. Then, after that, import VAT. Then, processing fee. Then, ECOWAS levy. Then, vehicle examination fee. Then, network charges. Then, network charge VAT. Then, network charge COVID. Oh, I'm shocked. Then, Ghana Shippers Authority. Then, import NHIL. Then, network charge NHIL. Then, GHS disinfection fee. Then, MOTI import declaration fee. Special import levy. Ghana Export Import Bank levy. Ghana Education Trust Fund. Ghana Education Trust Fund network charge. African Union import levy.
19.
Then COVID health recovery levy.
20.
Then certification.
21.
Then IRS. You know, there's overage penalty by zero because it's a new car. But if it was an overage car, it means it would be 23. You know, and so I was shocked myself. And I think, you know, but I'm going to tell you something. And this is about taxes and levies.
Yeah.
President gave a very good idea and said, look, we need to spread the tax net. And the other day I was talking about it. I am a head of a household. Myself and Auntie Lordina live in the house with our children. People come and work in the house. Somebody comes to service the air conditioners. Somebody comes to change the lights. Electricians come. I mean, all kinds of services. And you should see the charges. For me, I don't know whether they are presidential charges. Maybe because I've been president before. They are charging me more. But I'm sure you are facing the same this thing. The least work they come and do in your house is 1,000 cedis and over. And the question one asks is, those people who are charging, you pay them in cash, they take their money and they walk away. What tax are they paying on that money? And so it means that there are a whole host of people who are making good money but are not paying any taxes. And for most of them, they say they are in the informal economy. And so they don't register businesses. They are artisans. And so somebody came with an idea. He says, why don't we introduce a coupon? And you have to pay them with a coupon so that they have to go and cash that coupon. And when they cash that coupon, you put a 5% withholding tax on it. The idea is just still raw, but I think that it's a step in the right direction that we should look at and see how we can bring all those work people into the tax net, plumbers, electricians, and all of them, you know. So that's something we should look at.
So let's hear the response of the president of GUTA, Dr. Joseph Aben. He says the proposed 24-hour economy, if well implemented.
We all have that friend who wakes up early to go get everyone McDonald's breakfast, but the rest of us sleep in. This is your sign to thank them. And if you're that friend, this is us saying thank you.
Just a friendly reminder that right now, get any size iced coffee before 11 a.m. for just 99 cents. And a satisfying sausage McMuffin with egg is just $2.79. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Strayer University, we see you striving to work harder and go further. That's why we provide you with the tools you need to get there, like offering a brand new laptop when you enroll in a bachelor's program. So you can do your coursework anytime, anywhere, and always keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Eligibility rules, restrictions, and exclusions apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV and has many campuses, including at 2121 15th Street North in Arlington, Virginia.
Ted will be the game changer for the country.
And Your Excellency, let me give you one thing about your 24-hour economy. I think we had a program at School of Mass Communication, it was live. And I've actually thank you for this. At that time, people were just opposing. I said, no. If even you say that it is already there, there's nothing wrong for us to enhance it. And there's more that we can do in the night. There's more that we can do in the night. There are so many things that are creating nuisance in the afternoon. A lot of them. That when you go to Opera Square, when you go to Kantamanto, when you go to Okanshi, in the afternoon where people are shuttling around, that's where we are offloading our goods. And so it makes the place very congested and can. So, Your Excellency, let's think about the things that create nuisance in the day and put them in the night. So, it shouldn't be difficult for us to say that when you are clearing your goods within the weekdays where market is going on, unless maybe it is Sunday, those times you have to come after six.
This is The Pulse with me, Elton Brobe. We'll take a short break. When we return, we have more from the Ghana Statistical Service. Welcome back to The Pulse here on Joy News. Now, the Peasant Farmers Association of Ghana, they've condemned the recent decision by the government to approve the commercialization of 14 novel genetically modified products, including maize, soybean varieties. The association says that this move, orchestrated through the National Biosafety Authority, directly aligns with the interests of multinational seed companies, neglecting the concerns and well-being of local farmers and consumers. They argue that despite the nation's abundant food production with farmers' safe seed and locally bred varieties, the government's sudden embrace of GMOs raises critical questions about priorities amidst pressing national challenges like climate change. Now, Bismarck Owusu-Norte, Executive Director of the Peasant Farmers Association of Ghana, is right here with me in the studio as we go to this very important subject. Victor, you're welcome to the Pulse on Joy News.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, I mean, let's establish this. As we speak, legally, GMOs are allowed in Ghana.
Yes. So, if you look at our legal regime, in 2015, Parliament passed the National Biosafety Act.
Right.
The Act also established the National Biosafety Authority, and they have the power to approve the commercialization of GMO crops in the country. So legally, yes, they have the right to do that. And then in a sequel to that, they needed to have a protection for those who be interested in breeding GM and other types of varieties. So if you recall, from 2015 or so, there was a lot of haggle between the Registered General Department on one end and then groups like ours on another end. When we resisted the passage of the Plant Variety Protection Act.
Right.
Because we believe that...
The one I'm talking about, is it different from the Plant Breeders Bill?
So when it was in during the consultation stages, it was known as the Plant Breeders Bill.
Right.
But after it was passed, it was now known as the Plant Variety Protection Act.
So that is also in session?
So that has also been passed by Parliament. Now, the argument we were making when we resisted the Plant Breeders Bill in that form was that it was just a way to give legitimacy to allow GMOs to come into the country.
Right.
Because when the National Biosafety Act was passed in 2015, since 2015 till 2022, we had no issues about GMOs being introduced to the country. And rightly so, the GMO proponents know that without a legislation that backs them, that protects their rights, that guarantees that they have the right to arrest people who infringe on the laws, they will not come.
Exactly.
So they were patiently waiting for the act to be passed. And once the act passed, we saw how quickly
they came.
They released the varieties onto the system.
And how is that affecting farmers?
Well, when it comes to the actual rollout, The statement from the National Biosafety Authority clearly indicates that there are no GM variety of crops on the market for farmers to buy. Mm-hmm. That's what the statement says. And our effort is that we want to ensure that indeed there exists no time that there should be GM seeds on the market for farmers to go and buy. Mm. And we lay our reasons as very simple. In the first place, we agree that, and this is a well-known phenomenon in Ghana, that our agricultural sector is beset with a lot of challenges. And we every day we document those challenges.
Right.
Ranging from the fact that we have inadequate irrigation facilities. Mm. If you look at the report from the Ghana Irrigation Development Authority, that's GIDA, they are saying that we are just doing less than 10% of the potential irrigation of the country. We are doing way lower than record. Mm. When it comes to equipment and mechanization, we are not doing very well. We established what we call the Agricultural Mechanization Centers. And the idea was to have them in every district in Ghana to provide tractors and harvesters.
Exactly.
We've not done that. When it comes to access to finance, where farmers need money to be able to purchase inputs, plowing services, we all know the barriers. We know how interest rates are so high, farmers are not able to access facilities. When you come to markets, it's a major issue. As I'm talking to you now, if you send your reporters to the northern part of the country, northern region, upper east, northeast, part of Oti region, our rice farmers have done a lot of rice, but they are not getting markets.
And the reason being what?
One, because of the high cost of production, the price of the paddy rice is a bit high.
So, so
the local millers are not able to buy. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we have inadequate millers in the country, so they cannot mop up all the rice in the system. Thirdly, we've allowed for the cheap importation of other rice into the system. Mm. So that has saturated the system. So they feel that there's enough rice. So there's no need to go for local rice.
And there's also no direct agenda to promote local rice.
So even though on the we are making noise about promoting the exportation of local rice, when the farmers are putting in their effort to do that, there's no system in place to absorb the rice.
My thinking was that the Ghana buffer stock company.
Yes.
I mean, they had a program to buy the rice and then send it to, especially to the senior high school. That should have been
ideally.
I already made market
ideally,
for you.
Ideally, they don't have the capacity to do that. If you look at the tonnage of rice that is produced, they don't have the capacity.
Meaning, what buffer store cannot
they
buy
all. They don't have the capacity in terms of warehousing, in terms of even money to purchase the rice. They can't. Mm. Right. So you expect that as a country, these are the issues that are facing.
We should deal with.
So why don't we focus and deal with the issues? But we rather feel that, no, why don't we sidestep the whole process and go for a technology that we feel that if we implement it, it will eradicate all our problems and make our farmers richer.
And that's GMO.
The idea of the GMO. Mm. Now, in 2020...
But again, let me just find out. So, I mean, in terms of acceptance, in terms of embracing it, is that you are fully on board? Legally, it is to be here. Yes. But in terms of accepting it, what is the general feel around it?
For me, you can categorize the level of acceptance from the farmer's perspective and from the consumer's perspective. Mm. From the farmer's perspective, we've engaged our farmers. And I can tell an authority, majority of our farmers are against GMOs. They do not like it. Mm-hmm. And the National Biosafety Authority, I think about 2 years ago, they did a public forum with FDA on GMOs. Mm. And the consensus was so clear that majority of people were gathered there were against GMOs.
So it raised the question about the kind of consultation that went
absolutely
into the development of the bill
absolutely
and its passage.
Absolutely. And so I even implore your team that if you are done, you can just do a poll. Find out from your people how many of them will prefer GMOs and see the results. So, and it appears that our authorities are not listening to what people are saying, but they're interested in what they want to do. And that's where we have a problem. Because our problem is, why do you want to sidestep the whole process, abandon or ignore the key issue they're supposed to undertake, and then go for a solution that even jeopardizes our entire food system? And that's an area that we don't emphasize much enough. Mm. And let me tell you.
Right.
The seed industry is a very big multi-billion dollar industry.
Of course.
And currently, it has been controlled by about four big companies. The Bayerns, the Sargentes, the Monsanto, they control it. And currently, they control about 50-60% of the seed industry. And they are the ones who are pushing the GM agenda. Now, we always try to cite the Russian-Ukraine crisis and COVID to set an example. As a country, we depend so much heavily on inorganic fertilizer that we import from Europe and other countries. When Russia-Ukraine set in and COVID set in, what happened was that countries protected their food. So even those who are producing the input like fertilizer, they either reduced production or failed to export them. The ripple effect was that in Ghana, the price of input shot up. If you recall,
they were not in a position to even supply
absolutely
with the fertilizers.
Good, remember. Why? Because we were dependent on them for our fertilizer. Now, luckily, I hear that we are putting up our own fertilizer plants in Ghana, which we support very well, because that will also help us. So the foundation of your agriculture is actually the seed. Now, we also want to give a situation where the seed that we have now, we are now also going to leave it in the hands of these multinationals. So it means that in the next farming season or so, if we are not able to get a seed from them, we can't produce. Because the GM technology operates in such a way that if you're not careful, it is going to eradicate the local seed systems you have in the country.
Ivan, I was just coming to that. I mean, the threat this poses for general agriculture in the country.
Yes.
Because then what? If you don't buy the seed from them, you cannot be in business.
So let me explain. If you are a farmer, you have your farm here. I'm also a farmer, and I have my farm here. And you know, in Ghana, because of our land holdings, our farms are very close. If you decide to do a GM crop in your farm, and I decide not to do a GM crop, the same product, let's say maize, you are doing GM maize, I'm not doing GM maize. Now, when the crops are maturing, cross-pollination occurs. When cross-pollination occurs, the GM crops normally overtake the non-GM crops. So even though I'm not doing GM crops, because of cross-pollination, I'll be forced to harvest GM crops.
Exactly.
So gradually, all the other farmers who are doing the non-GM crops, based on their proximity to other farmers who might do GM crops, then you are contaminating them. Eventually, you'll be forced to do GM crops.
Exactly. You have no choice.
And that's the danger that we are likely to face if you allow this to happen. Now, when I was coming here, and I'm surprised that Joy Multimedia have not received this, but I had a response from the National Biosafety Authority.
But again, before you do the response, I understand that part of this, somebody is taking a legal action relating to the matter we are discussing.
Yes.
What exactly is the person seeking in court?
Well, there are a couple of reliefs that they are seeking. I think the first one they are seeking, and that's one of our partners called the Food Sovereignty Ghana. And one of the reliefs they are seeking is that per the act, the biosafety authority is supposed to constitute a board. And it's the board that will give directions to how the authority runs. But somehow, the board has not been set up, but the authority is running.
It's already working.
So the challenge is that on whose authority are you operating? That's one part of the leg. And I think the other part has to do with how well they've done work to ensure that GM products are safe. And so that's really more of a human rights issue that they're dealing with. So I'm even told they are not even happy with development, because they feel that once the case is in court, they should have allowed the process to end before the authority could have come out with that release. But that didn't happen. So I'm sure they are going back to court.
If I'm a farmer and I decided that I will not patronize the GMAC, to what extent would that affect my business?
Well, to the extent that one, you are not cropping near your fellow farmer who is also going for a GM crop.
But I'm thinking that what you have been used to cannot just run alongside the introduction of the GMOCs.
The GM crop is the GM technology is a very complex one. So that's why amongst all the varieties of seed is the only technology that mandates that the crops are labeled. when you are going to buy maize from the market, I'm not sure you care whether it's from Atampa or Pana or you just buy.
It's a question I will ask as we go on, whether or not, I mean, the products I'm buying, how sure am I that these are organic or these are genetically modified?
Exactly. So when you go to the market to buy your maize, you don't know. The only difference that most Ghanaians know is whether it's yellow maize or white maize finish. Mm-hmm. But the maize, there are several varieties, right? We have the OPVs, that's the open pollinated, and we have the hybrids, different varieties. Mm-hmm. Now, there is no danger in buying a maize variety such as hybrid when it's even mixed with another variety.
There's no danger.
No.
But I'm absolutely certain that there was a reason why Parliament insisted that we should have proper labeling.
So that is for the GM crops. That's what I'm saying. When it comes to GM, the technology is different. So that is why they are mandated to label. Because the consumer is supposed to know the choices he or she is making.
Are they doing that?
Well, currently, per the release, they said there's no GM product in the market.
100%.
That's what they say.
On every product.
They are mandated to do that. I don't have that capacity. Mm. So I can't dispute what they are saying. Mm. But they are saying that there's no GM products on the market. And indeed, if you go to their website, what the only approval they've given that is updated their website is the BT Cowpea that they've granted approval. Mm. The 14 varieties that they said they've granted approval, they are saying that it is not for cultivation.
But for what?
That's the interesting part. It's for food, for feed, and for industry.
Okay.
That is what their release is saying. That the variety that they released is not for cultivation. So, I mean, if I'm a farmer and I go to the market to buy seed, I won't get that GM seed on the market. Mm. Fair enough. The question that we are raising is that, one, you and I were here when the Ministry of Food and Agric told us that due to the success of the planting of food and jobs, mm-hmm. Ghana is now a net exporter of maize and soya. That we have more than quadrupled our production. We used to do about almost 600 metric tons. Now we are doing almost 1.8 million metric tons. So we have so much maize that we consume, we have enough for industry, and then we even export. So if the country is self-sufficient in maize production, on what basis are you telling us that you are now allowing for the import of GMO maize for us to consume?
Because we have more than enough.
Absolutely. The same with soya. We had a soya bean conference last year, with all the soya bean actors. Mm-hmm. And they were unanimous that if you look at the price of soya on the global market, there was higher demand for organic soya or non-GM soya. So it was important that as Ghana, we try and improve our production of non-GM soya to attract premium prices. Mm-hmm. So even the soya industry, they believe that non-GM soya is the best.
Exactly.
On that basis, they've all implored to continue to do their practices to plant non-GM soya. Then you come and tell us that you are bringing GM soya to the country for us to eat. For who to eat? And except for the feed industry. My brother, if you go to the poultry industry now, it's virtually on its knees. Because the poultry farmers are struggling to access feed. Maize and soya, that's what they use for their feed anyway. And one of the main reasons is that the price of these are very expensive.
And also sometimes not available.
They're available, is available. They can't buy it. Mm. Right? Now, we are being told that we are importing GM soya and maize to Ghana.
For do what? To reduce the price?
Which will be even expensive than what you are producing here. So, what's the logic? I mean, I don't get that logic.
You understand?
I get it. So, it appears that there is something that is amiss in this whole GM
conversation. So what really for you is a way forward? Is the door closed on you? Because government position is quite clear.
Yeah.
If government was not interested, they wouldn't have put these bills before Parliament
for
passage.
You're right. Well, I can tell you on authority that even though it appears that it's peasant farmers that have led the process to issue the statement and got the response, we have a lot of very powerful individuals and institutions that are backing us. I just had a chat with one very important personnel at the Ministry of Food and Agric. And he tells me, and I quote, that you should resist them. And that's a person for MUFA. So it means that even at the ministry,
yeah, not everybody is in support of this. But in terms of the resistance, how are you going about it?
We have a lot of things that we've planned. We hope to have a very mega press conference next week with all our allies coming on board. We are also planning to engage very key influential people who have already expressed their interest in joining our cause, but they want to understand the issues better. So we've engaged them, and then very soon we'll be on board. You know, we are a farmer group.
Of course.
And we have farmers all over the country. So, and they are agitating that, what can we do to support you? We want to go on demonstrations. We're like, okay, let's do the ingredient processes. So we have planned a couple of things that we'll be doing. And I'm sure that in a couple of weeks, you'll hear from us very soon.
But for the farmer, is he or she in a state of anger or fear of losing his business entirely?
It's a combination of a lot of distance. Because where the farmers say that, why are you forcing us to get things that we don't like? Right? And others to have genuine fears. Because sometimes you read reports from other countries like India or so, where some farmers were in debt crisis because of this GM stuff.
All right.
So some farmers are also apprehensive that what's in this for us. We also have a culture where we have a lot of farmers who practice their safe seeds. And they have a lot of indigenous seeds. And sometimes we try to downplay it. But these indigenous seeds, some of them have various traits. Some of them are tolerant to droughts, tolerant to flood, tolerant to some diseases. They are there.
Right.
So we are surprised. Why are we not focusing on whether developing that? And if you go even to my science colleagues and seniors, colleagues from CSIR and SARI, if you talk to them and they show you the catalog of local varieties that they've developed, they are there. Plenty. No kernel it. So why are we not interested in pushing what is ours?
All right. I guess it's a conversation that will expand. Hopefully next week after your news conference. Mr. Note, thank you very much for coming
through. Thank you for having me.
You're also watching The Pulse here on Joy News. Now, away from farming and the challenges that they have with GMOs and the other matters relating to the law that was passed, let's talk about something very disturbing. Now, more than 1,000 persons displaced by yesterday's fire outbreak in a slum community near Jamestown here in Accra are still without relief items 24 hours after their homes were destroyed. The victims, mostly fisher folks and their dependents, lost their entire belongings, including their earnings from their fishing activities, clothes, and even food. They are expected to pass a second night without shelter. Semifa Rejoice Pursue has more in this report.
The fire swept through over 500 wooden structures that served as shelters for the community. As a result, scores of families have been forced to sleep in the open with little to no access to basic necessities. The lack of immediate shelter, coupled with the destruction of personal belongings, has exacerbated an already dire situation for the affected residents. Individuals who lost their shelters in the blaze are now appealing to authorities for essential aid.
Last at around 1 something.
We were sitting close to the sea and we scented smoke and we thought it was someone burning carter. But we weren't convinced enough, so we decided to check where that thick smoke was coming from. Upon our arrival, we saw our homes burning to ashes. We didn't have enough water, so we didn't have a choice to go and fetch water from the sea. Indeed, we lost a lot.
Assembly member for the Gbagba City, Jamestown area, Festus Ni Ai Hayford, has been speaking to Joy News.
This place is a business area, so it's not an it's not a place for people to be living. Even though people do come and then after work, they have some massive structures around which they try to spend the night and all that, because some would have to go for sea probably at dawn or early the following morning. So those whose properties have been destroyed are the fishmongers. They have lost a lot of things. Engaging some of them, yesterday I came around when the fire was being quenched. And then we saw a few of them who were trying to salvage the few things that were left for them. It was a difficult thing to behold. A few of them who had to leave, just step out. Those who were able to salvage some of their stuff, they bought abubuya and then some other means of transportation to take them back to wherever they are coming from. Those who don't have anywhere going, they had to pay to their friends. That was what I saw. But just for us to know that this place, like I mentioned earlier on, it's not a residential area. It is a business area. And the numbers, as of now, I can't give you offhand because we are still putting the list. You know, they are dependents. So if you want to add the dependents to the main business owners, then you can be talking about these huge numbers.
Deputy Director of the Accra Sub-Metro of NADMO says efforts are underway to assess the full extent of damage and identify ways to support those who have lost their homes.
We are here to take their data so that we will know the number of people who are affected. Mayor and her team were here to grant interview, so she tasks us to come and take the data, and then we forward the data for her to know if there is any help that they can give to support them. We are taking down their names. Actually, we don't know those who are affected, so we have asked their leaders to take down their names, their items that are destroyed by the fire, and then we quantify it in the monetary term, and then we also do our assessment.
We all have that friend who wakes up early to go get everyone McDonald's breakfast, while the rest of us sleep in. This is your sign to thank them. And if you're that friend, this is us saying thank you.
Just a friendly reminder that right now, get any size iced coffee before 11 a.m. for just 99 cents. And a satisfying sausage McMuffin with egg is just $2.79. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Once upon a time, there was born a real estate brokerage that was also a magical app. They called it Redfin, and they're on a mission to get people the fairest deal of them all. With listing fees as low as 1%, Redfin agents charge half of what others often charge, so you have more money to put towards your dream home.
Could it be a gingerbread house?
If the witch wants to sell.
Download the Redfin app to get started. Fee subject to terms and minimums. Equal housing opportunity. CADRE number 01521930.
Do the reconciliation. We write a memo to it and we forward it to Lua. So they will also take it from there and see what they can do. Information or any the incident that happens, we will do our by getting the data and then we give it to the appropriate authorities and they will be working on it. So I can't say anything that we have the resourceful things to help or not for now.
In the meantime, affected residents remain in a state of uncertainty, grappling with the immediate aftermath of the fire and a daunting task of rebuilding their lives.
Now let me bring you an unusual story about a woman who cannot speak by herself. Any sound that she utters is by the help of an instrument, and was because she has throat cancer. That's the story of Mary Amankwa Fojo, who joins me in the studio to share her experience and what you can do to avoid falling into this situation. So, Mary, welcome to the Pulse. So, you are just telling me that the voice you are uttering is artificial voice.
Yes.
Why do you call it artificial?
I call it artificial voice because, unfortunately for me, I
was diagnosed of throat cancer. Mm-hmm. Actually, this month, they sent them a cancer awareness.
Okay.
And because I'm a member of it, and a victim of it, I decided to make a lot of noise about it. It's my common condition. Mm-hmm. I found myself having throat cancer, and through that, I have to lose my vocal box. Mm-hmm. And the vocal box gives three things in my life.
Okay.
We talk to it, we breathe through it, and then we eat through it. So if we are problem with this, I'm going to like this thing. Yes. So I don't have a vocal box. So in replacement, I'm using artificial voice.
And for you, this is a permanent feature of your life?
Yes, please.
And this month, you are creating awareness about throat cancer.
Yes.
Tell me your story, how the diagnosis and eventually the surgery and then this artificial provision.
Well, I'm a midwife,
okay,
and a baker. Mm-hmm. I work in the Volta region, to be precise, St. Anthony's Catholic Hospital. I have this hoarseness of voice. And I don't know what it was. I thought it was stress. It was breakage of voice. Anytime I talk, you hear breakage
in the voice. Like you were stammering.
Yes, yes. I didn't take it serious. So one time I got up and I saw swelling. I thought it was infection. The whole time it was something called Jimukutu.
Okay, yes, I know.
It was Jimukutu in those days. And then I treated it, antibiotics. But 2 weeks after treatment, I realized it was ongoing. So I had to go and report for medical intervention. When I went to report, I went to Kolibu Teaching Hospital. They had to take a biopsy, and unfortunately for me, it came out at throat cancer, stage 4.
Stage 4?
Yeah,
very unfortunate. Very advanced then.
Very advanced. Very unfortunate, I had cancer.
Mm.
So that's how I had it.
So this surgery was done in Ghana?
Yeah.
And this instrument put there?
Yeah, my Kolibu Teaching Hospital, ENT department, by Dr. Bedu and his team.
So for how long have you been with the artificial instrument that helped you to vocalize your
artificial is about almost a year now.
Mm.
But the surgery was done in 2021.
And I'm certain that awareness about this is very low.
That is
people may be working with signs and symptoms of it.
It's unfortunate that people are dying from it, but it's not known to people. That's why I'm advocating and raising awareness about it.
So in terms of the awareness creation, what exactly are you doing regarding on this one?
I'm educating people. Ghanaians, we take our life for granted. Certain things happen to us and we think it's normal. It may not be normal. So I was talking about some of the causes of this thing. We have HPV, human papilloma virus. It's a sexual transmitted disease.
And it can cause throat cancer.
I'm telling you.
How?
The same virus that causes cervical cancer. The same virus can cause throat cancer. And now cancer and pain and cancer. You say, no, no. There are a lot of them. But their cancer was one in the size 16 and 18. And then apart from that, they still take a lot of alcohol. You say, C1.
Very hot one.
Hot one.
45% alcoholic content, I know that.
Yeah. If you talk, think that one to have prone of it. Smokers, tobacco, and others. They are also prone to get cancer. And then your genetic makeup can also let you get or working area where there are gases and chemicals. A lot of burns, smokes, you are also prone on it. Some of the signs and symptoms are excessive cough.
Excessive cough.
You cough continuously, you treat to go to camp. Sore throat. You get sore throat, you take vitamin C. It goes and it comes.
Come back.
It's a signal.
You need to have a check.
Yeah. And when you have pain in the ear, the next time you feel there's a pain in the ear, please go and check. It might be
the one about the sexually transmitted diseases that can also result in throat cancer. It affects both sexes, right? Male and female.
That's yeah.
But who is at more risk? Both. Everybody can.
I don't know. I'm getting the more because they smoke more and then the alcohol intake is more than the females. But when it comes to the sexual transmitted diseases, on this, we do things to keep our partners.
Of course.
Go extra mouth.
Exactly.
We put our mouth in place.
Where the mouth is not supposed to be. So when you put your mouth where your mouth is not supposed to be, the danger is that you may be contracting this.
Of course.
Some people call it head. I don't know what it means. Maybe we'll try and explain it further.
Yeah, so you have to be conscious of what you do in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And the holes you enter into.
And so it is important that people take serious view of this. You mentioned that people are dying out of this and they don't even know that they are working with these things.
A lot of people have witnessed some accepted chemotherapy and radiation with them and they couldn't make it. They couldn't, in fact, it's a drastic life change condition. And if you don't take care, depression can even kill you.
Of course.
My nose is not working. Because after the surgery, they are going to disconnect the ear. So I don't breathe through my nose.
Wow.
I breathe through the hole at my neck. Mm-hmm. And the same hole I have my artificial voice and see too. And then I have feeding problems. So as I'm sitting, I'm on tubes.
You're on tubes.
Yeah.
So if you want to eat anything?
Yeah, if I want to eat something, I pass it through my mouth. But if I'm on a challenge, I go to my tubes.
Wow. That would be a spectacle.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean the end of the world.
So,
So you've taken this very important assignment to educate people to understand. How are you going about it? And you have other avenues that people can access information through you.
Yes, in the meantime, I've opened a WhatsApp group for all the throat cancers at the Economic Teaching Hospital. As soon as you are diagnosed, the doctor should bring you to me so that I can inspire you with my risk now.
Right.
And then after that, I have a social media handle. I'm live from, I'm active on TikTok.
Right.
And then
what's the name of the handle?
My official voice of the voiceless.
Okay.
So, I'm talking for the voiceless. Most of the truth cancer patients are voiceless. Not all of them can use the device I'm using because of their medical conditions. So if God has given me the privilege, why not?
Make more noise about it.
I'm not a category.
Of course, I can see that. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming. In the days to come, because it's a whole month awareness creation, we'll bring you more so that we can talk more about throat cancer and what we should look out for. If you are experiencing anything that you are not so sure about it, they need to have a check early so that does not develop to end stage where it becomes extremely difficult to survive out of it.
Thanks for helping.
All right.
God bless you.
Thank you so much for coming to Enfocus. That's our show this afternoon here on Joy News. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. My name is Elton Brobe. We shall be with you tomorrow, same time. Until then, have a good day. Mubarak.